This is Fresh Air. Dictionaries aren't just the arbiters of what's right and wrong. They're a reflection of how our language is always changing. To keep up with these changes, the American Heritage Dictionary has just published its third edition. In a New York Times review, it was described as, quote, surely the most pleasurable dictionary ever published in this country and one of the most useful, unquote. This dictionary not only gives you definitions, spellings, and derivations, there are short essays about word histories and usage. My guest, Anne Siwanoff, is the executive editor. And in the interest of full disclosure, we should say that Fresh Air linguist Jeffrey Nunberg is the chair of the usage panel. It's been 10 years since the previous edition of the American Heritage Dictionary. I wanted to know why the time was right for a new one.
10 to 12 years traditionally has been the life cycle of an adult abridged dictionary, chiefly because lexicographers need to watch the language to see how much is changing and what is changing. We expect in the future that given major societal changes and world changes, such as the ones we've seen just in the past 2 or 3 years, the life cycle of the adult dictionary may decrease to, say, 6 years or 7 years. Also, computer technology has now enabled lexicographers to make changes and craft new editions with much more ease than in the past.
Any idea how many words are in the new dictionary that weren't in the previous dictionary?
About 10,000 new words and about 6,000 new senses of existing words.
One of the fields, so to speak, that's really changed a lot in the last 10 years is slang, and, you know, street slang, and thinking, for instance, all the words that have come out of rap music and hip-hop culture. Now, hip-hop is in your new dictionary, but words like chill and deaf aren't in it. How do you decide which words from, you know, street talk and musical slang are going to make it in?
For one thing, we read and mark a wide variety of newspapers, news magazines, specialized journals, sports publications, novels, and so forth, nonfiction books, over the long term, so that we get an idea of new terms that are coming into the language. And we also get an idea of how certain terms that might be stigmatized as slang are being used by the best writers across the country. Also, we used computer scanning to get hundreds of millions of examples of words in context in reputable publications across the country. If we accrued substantial evidence quantitatively and over time, and by over time I mean 5 to 7 years in a diverse group of publications, evidence that a particular word like homeboy or yo, if that word is being used in a broad group of printed publications that are deemed mainstream publications, then we consider entering the word in the dictionary. And therefore, we do have some terms from the hip-hop culture.
You write the Word Watch column for The Atlantic magazine, in which you keep up with new words that are entering the vocabulary.
Yes.
Let me ask you about one of those words. I've never heard this before. It's an interesting one, shoulder surfing.
Oh, yes. There are lots of surfings going on in the country right now, and shoulder surfing, of course, is a way of gaining access to someone else's telephone credit card, for example, or in a computerized work setting, perhaps gaining entry to a particular computer system and learning the codes by watching over another person's shoulder. And indeed, at airports, shoulder surfers sometimes operate from balconies. It really should be called balcony surfing. They will get up on a balcony over a concourse and either with binoculars or some other means of vision attempt to gain access to people's telephone records and access cards.
Velcroid is a good term. Tell us what that means and how you first started tracking it.
Oh, Velcroid was brought to our attention by some of the readers of the column. And our readers are very, very good word watchers. They suggest words and often send us citations to attest the occurrence. Velcroid is particularly interesting because it is a takeoff on the trademark Velcro. And Velcroid actually means a person who is usually either in the inner circle or on the fringes of the inner circle of a political leader. Could be anybody, the president of our country or a prime minister or whatever. And this person tries to insert himself or herself into every photo opportunity just to create a stronger image in the press.
So they're clinging to somebody famous.
Absolutely.
As if attached by Velcro to get them in the limelight.
Yes.
What are some of the words you're watching right now?
That's a great question. One of the things that we're watching is Zero Parent, Zero Hyphen Parent, as in Zero Parent Child and Zero Parent Family, because we know that there are probably 2.8 million of these children in the country, children who have no parents at all because the parents have either died, have been murdered, have been put in prison, or have simply abandoned the children. Another one is decession, D-E-C-E-S-S-I-O-N, which refers to the economic climate.
I want to say the word that you mentioned, decession, that's a compound of depression and recession, right?
That's correct.
So new social change and economic change requires new words to describe it?
Quite often, and then senses change of existing words. Family, for example, has changed considerably. In its definition during the last 25 years, and so has retire.
Hang on, I'm going to look up family in the dictionary.
Okay.
I noticed, by the way, family values is not it's not in here.
No, it's not. But what I'm going to say certainly has something to do with that.
Okay, hang on.
You want to look at senses 1A and 1B.
Okay. 1A is a fundamental social group in society, typically consisting of a man and woman and their offspring. 1B is two or more people who share goals and values, have long-term commitments to one another, and reside usually in the same dwelling place.
Yes, those are the new definitions of family in the third edition of the American Heritage Dictionary. And if you notice, they contain qualifiers, and they're also very broad. Since 1A states categorically that this fundamental social group typically consists of a man and a woman and their offspring, so it allows for many possibilities. Since 1B does not specify gender, it allows for single parents, and it does not specify marital vows. Now, you may want to hear what the dictionary said 25 years ago.
Absolutely, yeah.
Here's the definition from the first edition of the American Heritage Dictionary for family. Quote, "The most instinctive, fundamental, social or mating group in man and animal, especially the union of man and woman through marriage and their offspring, parents and their children." So gender is specified. People seem to be grouped with animals. It is specified that it's a mating group, and marriage is specified. So you can see how far people have grown and gone since 1969. And the point of this, of course, is that lexicographers have to be extremely careful when words such as family are used in the press or in politics, for example. We have to know exactly what is meant by family.
Anne Suwanov is the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Anne Suwanov, the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. There's a lot of interesting usage notes in the new American Heritage Dictionary, and some of the interesting notes have to do with language as it applies to different ethnic groups or to gender.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, under the word black, there's an interesting note about whether black as it applies to African Americans should be capitalized or not. And the note points out that if you capitalize black, then should you capitalize white? And if you capitalize white, that implies that whites make up a single ethnic group, which they don't. On the other hand, if you capitalize black and you don't capitalize white, it will raise questions about whether the writer, why the writer has distinguished between the two groups. And the entry ends by saying there's no entirely happy solution to this problem. In all likelihood, uncertainty as to the mode of styling of white has dissuaded many publications from adopting the capitalized form black. I think it's really interesting that instead of giving you a simple answer, this note tries to make sense of what's happening in the culture, how people are reacting to the usage, and then basically leaves it up to you to decide.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And the same holds true with color, person, people, man, woman of color. We handle that particular issue in the same way, and we also point out that this particular locution, which had been used a number of years ago, has now been revived for use with reference to African Americans, Asians, Native Americans, and so forth. And we even include a quote from Jesse Jackson at the a usage note for color. And we point out that person of color or people of color is regarded by many as being better, a better word than the word minority, because in fact many of the people in this particular group are not minorities by number at all. And so we do try to alert our readers to possible problems that they might have in using terms such as Hispanic or Chicano or Native American in our usage notes. We also cover issues of sexual preference and physical challenge and, of course, gender, because changes in gender in English really represent probably the most important shift in language usage during the past 400 years.
What was one of the more thorny issues surrounding gender-related language that you had to deal with?
Well, I think probably the generic pronoun he.
Oh, yeah.
He has a usage note that goes over 80 lines, as does the usage note at the word man. But the exciting thing that we found out is this, that most of the usage panel, male and females, have taken into account at least some of the concerns that the feminist movement raised many years ago. And a good example of that concern is this one. Less than 40% of the usage panelists would use the masculine pronoun his in the following sentence, quote, "A child who wants to become a doctor should be encouraged by blank parents and teachers." So we found that the usage panel actually did serve as a bellwether or a sounding board or whatever to the kinds of changes that we had already noted going on across the country in edited and unedited prose.
Well, let me say the real good news, I thought, on this particular usage question was that a lot of people on the panel said it's okay to say if a child wants to be a doctor, their parents should encourage them.
Mm-hmm.
And I use this solution all the time. Instead of saying his or her parents should encourage them, no, it would have to be his or her parents should encourage him or her.
Yes, and it can
get so cumbersome.
Yes.
So I use the plural, which is not related to gender, they, them, their. It's gender-free. And then I'm always having people call me up and criticizing me because didn't I know they is plural, whereas child is singular. But I think it's a really perfectly okay solution, and I was thrilled that a lot of the people on your dictionary thought it was perfectly okay, too.
Yes, and that's an example of how people change the language.
Right, so you're watching us as much as we're referring to you.
Absolutely.
Are there new words that are coming from the realm of bureaucracy?
Oh, yes, corpocracy, for example, which means the corporate bureaucracy, for example. Words such as eurocrat, E-U-R-O-C-R-A-T, bridge both the bureaucracy of the corporation and of the government. Narco-kleptocracy, which is a portmanteau word, it means a government that is basically run by a shadow government of drug dealers.
How often do you refer to a dictionary yourself?
All the time.
What do you use it for?
I use it chiefly to check spellings and meanings and very, very often to look up the histories of different words. And I'm always surprised when I go into the word histories, even though I've read them many, many times during the course of editing. I find it very exciting to look up sunbeam, for example, and discover that that word came into the language in the writings of King Alfred the Great during the Dark Ages.
Anne Suwanov is the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary's new third edition. She also writes the Word Watch column for The Atlantic Magazine. This is Fresh Air.